welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders Podcast Series. The goal of this podcast is to bring semiconductor experts together to get to the truth about the matter at hand. We'll get right to the point and not exceed 30 minutes of your time. If you have a topic you would like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it. Good morning. With me today is my podcast partner, Mike Gianfagna. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Dan.
Our guests today are Simon Butler, founder of Methodics. Good morning, Simon.
Morning.
And Brad Hart, CTO of Perforce. Good morning, Brad.
Good morning to you as well.
So Methodics was acquired by Perforce, so we want to talk about that. But first, Simon, can you tell us how you got started in semiconductors?
Sure. I started working on DSP design, hardware design for Fujitsu in the UK in the early 90s. And I was actually hired out of that company into an EDA startup and moved to Silicon Valley in the mid 90s. And that company was acquired by Cadence, a company called High Level Design, in the late 90s. So that kind of kicked off a run of various startup companies in the Valley until I started my business around 2005 or so, I suppose.
Brad, can you tell us how you started your journey?
Absolutely. So out of college as a mechanical engineer, I worked in the aerospace and automotive industries as a mechanical engineer, and kind of found interest in the large-scale computer software business, and I went and worked for a company, Rational Software, which was acquired by IBM, which specialized in version control for enterprises. And after doing that for a number of years, I helped co-found a company called Accurev, really targeted at large-scale enterprise version control problems that people had in the market. And eventually, it led me to Perforce, who I used to compete with, and now I'm leading the product strategy and go-to-market solutions teams for Helix Core, which is the version control product at Perforce, again, aimed at really massive scale and gaming and semiconductor environments, large files, lots of binaries, et cetera. So that's kind of what I'm doing day to day.
Yeah, I remember Rational. That's quite a history. So let's talk about the acquisition. Some EDA acquisitions are opportunistic and some are strategic. I think this one is clearly the latter. Can you tell us more about why Perforce acquired Methodics, Brad?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, initially, really, the most obvious benefit was we've been partners for a long time, really good partners. Same target market in the semiconductor environments, same types of challenges around scale that we're trying to help our customers with. We've always worked really well together. We thought bringing, you know, Methodics in-house would be a 1+1=3 situation. But in addition to that, more strategically, the technology and the types of problems that Methodics is solving around IP reuse, traceability, security, scalability, those kinds of problems exist in other industries as well. Gaming, virtual production, automotive, medical devices, they have the same needs, the same problems. And so the strategy there is to see how we can leverage the technology and the knowledge that the Methodics team has built so terrifically in other industries as well. A lot of opportunity there for us. So it was a very strategic acquisition.
Thanks for that background, Brad. Simon, a question for you. What was the biggest change over the history of Methodics that allowed your broad-based IP management strategy to become so successful?
I think really there was an evolution from kind of file level management with fairly simplistic wrappers over tools like Helix Core to give version control to the analog design community. So that was kind of our beginning point, and that's still a core product of ours, something called Versic. But it became pretty clear to us as we engaged with customers and grew that they really needed to manage more than just the Cadence data. You know, there's a lot of embedded software, RTL, of course, a lot of different kinds of assets that all kind of come together to build SoCs and chips. So, which really means that the scale goes up exponentially. Around 2013, I suppose, we hired some really key folks, including Peter Tunis, our CTO, who are ex-Yahoo folks who are at masters at scaling enterprise applications. So I think around about that period, we knew we wanted to move into more of an IP management strategy and basically create some kind of framework around managing those assets, including a whole meta layer. And to do that, we needed to change the profile of the team a little bit and really become a credible enterprise software company. So I think that's when it started. And if you look at us today, you know, of course, we do have a lot of EDA roots, a lot of folks here at XEDA, people including myself, but really the majority of the team are real enterprise software experts. And now we're part of Perforce, that's only become, you know, even deeper. So I think that was a really fundamental change for us.
You know, you're describing a scalability challenge here, which is a formidable task. A lot of companies don't get that right. How did you achieve success in that area?
Well, there's a couple of things in our favor. The first is that we were self-funded, and we had the luxury of, you know, doubling down in areas that weren't necessarily initially generating lots of revenue, but really, you know, being consistent and trying to nail workflows and use models. And the current product we have now, the IPLM product for IP management, really on our third or even fourth, if you count the original prototype version of that. And the second, the third version, I'm sorry, was a complete rewrite. And we gathered these use models, we'd engaged with some really collaborative customers, and we kind of knew what the tool needed to do, but we just didn't anticipate the bottlenecks, we didn't anticipate the scaling issues. And we basically ran two teams for over a year. One, you know, supporting existing customers with the existing product, and the other team was basically off rewriting the database. We went to a graph database, Neo4j, which was a huge change for us. We'd be trying to use SQL before that, and the GraphDB lends itself much better to this kind of problem. We went in and re-architected the clients. We rewrote the server, so there really was a period where we were basically spending every penny we had back in the product, doubling down on these use models and trying to become a credible enterprise solution that scaled for these very large semiconductor companies. Yeah, and that was around 2014, I'd say. A little scary because, you know, clearly it's kind of an expensive process running two parallel development teams, especially for a self-funded startup, but it worked out great.
Okay, that helps a lot. Yeah, being self-funded gives you a tremendous additional degree of freedom that most companies don't enjoy. It's also scary, as you point out. You made some big bets there along the way, and it looks like they paid off.
Definitely, yeah, we definitely made some bets. But you know, we always felt confident that this whole space was going to take off. You know, even early on when we were just doing Cadence data management, all our customers were asking for a bigger, you know, a bigger slice of management in terms of these other kinds of assets. So we were getting very clear signals from the industry that this is where it was headed. I believe that we were kind of the first in some ways with a commercial solution. And, we basically, to be honest, at this point, we do, of course, compete with the other data management companies. But our biggest kind of opponent, if you like, are the PLM tools. And I feel that we've carved out a niche between traditional PLM and the data management piece, and we call it IPLM, IP management, IP lifecycle management. So we're really evangelizing that new vertical and getting folks to pay attention. That's been the other big part of the effort is to try and get that concept and to disrupt a little bit the PLM flows and dial in tighter integrations with the Perforce style data management flows. That's been a huge huge part of it as well.
So I have a question for you, Brad. How do you see collaboration between software teams and hardware teams affecting IP reuse and component-based design?
Sure. So that's a great question. I mean, there's, you know, we're no longer in a world of silos, right? Where, you know, hardware is developed one way, software is developed another way, and then hopefully you try to stick it all together at the end of the day. We know in any kind of, whether it's component-based design or, you know, hardware, software, waiting to the end of cycle to integrate and test and bring these changes together is a disaster waiting to happen. It always, always affects release times, quality, and the rework required to deal with those issues can be pretty catastrophic to release cycles and to the business. So one of the things that we are seeing is, for no question, is trends around bringing it all together under a single source of truth. And really the vision with Helix Core and Methodics IPLM is to allow for the independence of development that is required for these teams, but provide the capabilities that their changes, the connections can be managed and tested and fit together early on in the process, right? Single source of truth, you're not chasing down different silos. We're breaking down communication barriers to enable collaboration between these teams, because at the end of the day, it's one product. To the consumer, it's one product, and it all has to work. There's no blame of, well, you know, it was a hardware change or it was a software change. It's one product that has to deliver upon expectations. So the earlier you can bring these teams together, and then when you think about just a pure component-based development model, the benefit there, obviously, is people can work independently on each component according to its definitions. But once again, it has to come back together. And it has to be tested, and it has to be easy to integrate, easy to test, easy to address issues, right? The earlier you find problems and defects, it's exponential how much more it costs to find and fix these defects in production or close to production at the end of the development cycle. So really what we're all about is trying to bring these worlds together, bring these silos together. We do something very similar in the gaming industry with people working on art assets, digital assets, and the code. All these different pieces come together to make a big enterprise AAA game. Bringing that all together in a single source of truth, bringing these teams together for collaboration, it's a very similar type of model that we see in these hardware and software teams. So big challenges, big problems in the market, that's what we're here to solve.
Yeah, you know, there has been a big shift between hardware engineers and software engineers. You know, when I joined the industry out of school, I had started in software, but I moved to hardware because there were 10 hardware jobs for every one software job back then in the 80s. And now it's probably the opposite. So, you know, there's 10 or 20 software jobs for every hardware jobs, I think. So that seems to be a part of the complication that you're experiencing, I would expect.
Oh, for sure. 100%. And people are having to learn. They have to transition. You know, maybe you have people learning new skills. If these things aren't done in silos, right? It's a product team. And so people are having to sort of cross that chasm, work with each other, at least understand what the hardware folks need to understand what the challenges the software team is having, and vice versa. So the tools that we're trying to build to provide, you know, collaboration across these teams, and knowing we're dealing with different personas, and that to your point, it's shifting dramatically. More and more is being done in software, which traditionally could only be accomplished in hardware, but these things need to talk together, and you need to support both, right? As people go from their legacy products to their next generation, they're providing similar capabilities, but they're doing it in a much different way. So being able to help people with those transitions and being able to manage legacy applications as well as supporting their new initiatives. You know, these are the kinds of challenges that we're out there trying to help people solve.
Yeah, you know, just a quick follow-up question. How has COVID changed this? People are working remotely. What about IP security? I mean, what changes have you seen over the last year?
Simon, you want to take that? I know you had some thoughts on that.
Sure. Obviously, with folks working from home, there's more possibility for leakage and control. It's a little more difficult to control the environment. So I think IP security has become even more of a concern, and IP leakage. So that's an area that we've really been focused on, especially with these multinational continental design teams, where you've got different levels of security threat and risk on the geo. That's been an area of real investment on our part, and Perforce has already been very strong around that piece, geo fencing and the such like. So just generally, I think the needle has really moved on the level of of visibility that the people need and expect from their management systems, to the point where we're really trying to predict issues. We're not just waiting for things to happen. We're trying to set up profiles, set up an environment so that if something happens, maybe a mistake was made, and something becomes exposed or leaked, there's notifications and events baked into the system that tell you and let you know that you're exposed. Yeah, I think COVID has really helped drive the collaboration aspect of design even more. And with that comes certain a new set of problems you need to grapple with.
You know, it's interesting, Dan, your comment about getting out of school and moving into hardware. I got out of school a little bit earlier than you, and I actually ran from hardware and went to software, which at the time was a counterintuitive thing to do. I guess it worked out. My love affair with EDA blossomed quite well over the years. But you're right, in the beginning, that was an interesting choice, and there weren't a whole lot of jobs in that part of the world. So it's changed tremendously over time. It's definitely has tipped to the software side. You know, Simon, a related question here on process. You know, Methodics is known as being agnostic with regard to data management. How does the Perforce acquisition affect that?
You know, it doesn't really. We've always said and felt that Helix Core is the best in class data management tool for our kinds of semiconductor data. And that's really borne out by the industry. You know, if you look across the larger companies, almost all of them have invested in Perforce as their back-end data management solution. And that's really because, Helix does such a great job with managing these large binary assets and scaling the deployment of those assets across different design centers. So out of the box, Helix is just a great back-end, data management solution. And we've really, over the years, evolved our integration. And now that we're part of Perforce, we have, we've had our engineering team members from the Helix side move over to the Methodics team. And the level of integration and optimizations we've been able to do has really expanded. So hasn't really changed that. In fact, it's helped in many ways. Now, of course, there are a lot of software folks that are using things like Git, and our integrations there, continue to evolve. You know, we're very focused on making our Git community successful, and others actually. From what we see, if you're actually trying to manage large scale binary assets, there's really only one game in town, and that's Helix. So if anything, this acquisition has helped us do a better job around integrating those workspaces into our tool.
Yeah, you know, when I heard rumblings that Methodics might be acquired, I was putting a list of companies, potential acquiring companies in my mind, and Perforce didn't make it on the list. And, I think it's just a brilliant acquisition. I think it's very disruptive. So congratulations. But just one final question, Brad, just to sum it up. You have Methodics, you know the market. What's next? What's next for Perforce? Where are you guys going with this?
Yeah, so we, it's really kind of a twofold thing. So sort of as a, overall business strategy, we're building and extending our own products to solve problems in really the enterprise DevOps space. But DevOps may or may not even be the right word, right? It's really anywhere where our target market are large enterprises that are building things that drive revenue for their company, right? And so we're always adding to our portfolio, filling gaps where we see that the market has needs. And much like with the acquisition of Methodics, which filled a big hole in our portfolio for the customers in the semiconductor and embedded market, we're always looking for opportunities to extend our capability. With that, we're also looking how we can leverage the tools that we have in other cross-sell target markets. And again, like as I mentioned earlier, with Methodics, for example, the problems that they are uniquely able to solve with the IPLM product for the semiconductor market, we are looking at ways to leverage those same capabilities and technology to go solve the same problems in gaming, film, medical, automotive, et cetera. So we are laser focused on enterprise markets and the pains and problems we have. We're not all about cool technology. We're about solving problems for people that are trying to generate revenue. So there's a lot of opportunities there with the products we have and with future acquisitions.
Thank you, Brad. Simon, do you have any closing thoughts?
Yeah, definitely. You know, as we've mentioned, you know, there's definitely a shift to the to focus on the software part of these various designs, and really, our largest customers are asking us for a kind of a unified bill of materials approach where they have traceability across the software stack, across the hardware stack. They can see that they've got, you know, drivers that match versions of drivers that match the hardware components they're deploying. That their open source software stack is licensed correctly and isn't going to create problems downstream. So our platform really brings all that together, and that unified BOM where you have a single graph that can show you all those components and really identify issues way before they come up, has turned out to be one of the major areas of interest for our customers, our larger enterprise customers. So, you know, being with Perforce now, with all the pedigree they have, the expertise they have around software development, has really been a lot of synergy and value. So we're very excited.
Great. Great content, guys. Thank you very much for your time. I think this is a good place to stop, and we'll see you again next week. That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening, and have a great day.